Hey everybody, welcome into episode number 105 of Toeing the Slab, Pitching with David Cone. It is weekly pitching talk with the five-time World Series champion, the former Cy Young Award winner David Cone, the ace of research, James Smythe, myself, Justin Shackle. We have our wonderful producer, Dan Work, with us as well. Guys, every single week leading up to the trade deadline this summer, we discussed the future of Shohei Ohtani and the Angels. And now, every week we do a show, we discuss the future of Shohei Ohtani and the Angels. This week, not so much the Angels. More Shohei Ohtani here. His agent commented on his client's UCL injury on Monday. He said it was inevitable that Ohtani would need some type of procedure on his elbow. And he added that Ohtani would be in somebody's lineup next year, DHing when the bell rings. And that's pretty much the extent of his comments here. So I welcome you guys into another episode by asking you this. Did these comments by Ohtani's agent help, harm, or keep his free agent market the same?
Well, I think any clarity helps, certainly. I mean, we were kind of in the dark. I mean, it's kind of hard to even get to Shohei himself or get any information. You know, I mean, we've tried on Sunday Night Baseball to get to him and just to talk a little bit. And, you know, it's really, really difficult to penetrate and get any information at all. So it has to help. Any clarity at all helps. But nonetheless, I think we know that any future deal is going to have to be sort of incentive-based in terms of how much he's going to pitch, what's the procedure. You're going to need more clarity moving forward. What kind of procedure is going to have to be done? We know offensively what he can do, but it's a DH. It's one dimensional. It's a power lefty. He's great. Not taking anything away from him, but it's a DH right now. And that's a different animal than somebody that you can count on being the type of pitcher he's shown that he can be.
I think, well, while it is good that, you know, there's a little bit more clarity here, I think people kind of saw the writing on the wall already that he was going to need some kind of surgery and that this was really going to throw a wrench into his free agency. However, you know, we do get a little bit more info. There's the possibility of him not needing the full Tommy John, but rather the internal brace procedure that is tending to grow in usage there. So maybe the recovery wouldn't be as the recovery time wouldn't be as severe. So we're learning a little bit more, but I think as far as the big picture with his free agency, I think it's relatively the same.
I think it changes things. I think there's a lot of ambiguity here. I think his agent said as much as he probably should and could. Nothing to go off of this, but you may not know what's going on with Ohtani's UCL until they actually cut him open. And at that point, you know, teams could probably be saying, as they gain more leverage here with this situation, hey, you know, let us know what you find and we'll take it from there. So, yeah, I think we've come to believe that he could shatter the dollar amount and he possibly still could. But I mean, I think it's going to be heavily laid with incentives now from the pitching side. And it could be one of the more complex deals that ever comes across Major League free agency. So still wait and see mode. I think these comments from his agent, it leads us to believe that the leverage, in my opinion, is slowly shifting toward the teams because it's like, you know, hey, let us know what you find and then we'll get back to you. There's a lot of mystery still over the Shohei Ohtani injury concerns here. A lot of news coming out of the LA area, obviously, with pitchers, Shohei Ohtani, Julio Urías with the Dodgers. As we begin here with the opener, David was arrested. Another domestic violence incident allegedly taking place in the you know, the recent days here with Urías, his second offense, and he's not with the Dodgers now. No telling if he'll be back this season. Odds are he won't be. So let's stick with how this affects the Dodgers rotation here as we begin this episode with the opener. And you have the Dodgers, really good team, always looking for rotation stability, and their innings leader, their starts leader, is presumably done for the season here.
Yeah, no, there's no two ways about it. It's an awful story all the way around for everybody involved. I certainly hope everybody's okay, everybody's healthy and safe. That's the main thing here, pitching secondary. But nonetheless, it's time to move on from him. And you start thinking about Walker Buehler, and his rehab start. He looked pretty good in his first rehab start. And we were talking to James beforehand, and he kind of got a different look to his windup. So we're kind of anxious to see how that works out. And a lot, we see that a lot with guys that are coming off of an elbow injury, that, you know, a lot of the medical data teaches us that something in your delivery about getting the ball out of your glove and getting the ball up into throwing position by the time your foot lands can really help take some stress off your elbow. So I kind of think just at first glance from looking at Walker Buehler's new windup that that's probably what he's trying to do, and it makes sense. And now there's just enough time for him to get back and potentially play a pretty significant role in postseason, either, you know, in the middle or the back end of their rotation or whatnot. But yes, you know, I'm watching Walker Buehler right now.
Potential ace in the hole to parachute in just in time for the playoff push. And Bruce Kuntz, I think I said his name right, from Dodgers Digest, had a good side-by-side video. It's Buehler's delivery from last season with his rehab start with AAA Oklahoma City. And if you're watching the our feed here, you kind of see it side by side with the shorter windup, the quicker delivery. He went six up, six down at AAA, and Dave Roberts said that they're going to bring him back when he can fully handle a starter's workload. So does that mean once he's able to go five or six innings, and then they'll bring him back? But he will be a huge addition to the Dodger rotation. And don't forget about Clayton Kershaw. You know, he doesn't show up on a lot of the leaderboards because he missed a lot of time. So he's only made 20 starts, 112 innings, but he has a 2.48 ERA. So it's like he's as good as he's ever been. And if you have a 1-2 punch like that atop your rotation with their lineup, they are going to be maybe not Atlanta, but they're one of the teams to beat in the October push.
Yeah, I feel Walker Buehler is a different breed for sure. I'm wondering if it's too much too soon. Again, the stress of postseason pitches and innings is a lot. And let's make no mistake about it, he just had his first rehab outing after September 1st. So to completely replace Urias, I doubt it. Obviously, to become a piece, an added piece to lighten the load for this entire Dodgers staff, yeah, absolutely, for Walker Buehler. I'm wondering, though, that shortened delivery there, we've seen that from a lot of pitchers around the game in recent memory. Is it just something of a simplifying mechanism, David? What's behind everybody, or not everybody, but the pitchers who have done it, what's behind pitchers shortening up their delivery?
You know, I touched on it a little bit, you know, in what I said before, but I think it really, watching that video tells me a lot in terms of the shortened delivery, as opposed to he went over his head the full windup before. And we're not talking about the stretch position, just the windup, that it's more of an abbreviated windup. He keeps his hands at the belt a little more, but that allows him to get the ball out of the glove in the middle of his delivery. And once you start that process of getting the ball out of the glove and on its route to the circle part and up to the release point sooner, that's happening sooner in that new delivery, that's potentially what's going to take pressure off of his elbow. So the sooner you can get the ball in the throwing position, the sooner you can get closer to your release point, that allows you more time for your lower half to sort of catch up. And then, as I said before too, as well, is by the time you land, by the time you brace yourself with your lead leg and your plant foot, you're already kind of cheating and getting the ball up into the throwing position. That's the key move. That's what everybody's trying to do nowadays. We see it even in some short arm deliveries, like a Lucas Giolito or guys that have much shorter arm action nowadays. That's the theory behind it, is just to take pressure off of your elbow. Makes a lot of sense with Walker Buehler coming off an elbow injury again. So yes, that's what he's trying to do. It looked good in that delivery. You can kind of see that little bounce in his glove and the ball getting out quickly out of his glove. That's what he's trying to do. That's a good move. And that's probably going to help him in the long run and keep some pressure off of his elbow.
All right. Speaking of the Dodgers and their recent play lately, they ran into the Braves at their home ballpark over the last weekend. They had a 4-game series with Atlanta. Braves pitching held the Dodgers to 3 runs or less over the final 3 games of that series. They end up taking 3 out of 4 from the Dodgers. They were the first team to 90 wins. Is there any team in baseball at the moment that can dethrone the Braves in your eyes, guys?
Probably the most complete team going right now. We know about that lineup. I mean, offensively, they are historically good. especially early in the first inning. I mean, they are in complete attack mode. I think of all the teams out there, if I'm an opposing pitcher, that's the lineup you fear the most. You know, you got your MVP candidate, probably the MVP. And although Mookie Betts is going to have something to say about that, but when you have a, you know, Acuña Jr. at the top of the order, the pressure comes from the first pitch on. He's ready to swing the bat immediately. And that changes your whole approach as a pitcher. So you have to be ready from the first inning on. They've scored runs in the first inning at a historic pace. Is the pitching going to be enough is the question. Is, you know, Spencer Strider at the top is your strikeout guy. How does the rest of your rotation shake down in terms of filling in the blanks? And but nonetheless, they are the team to beat without a doubt. And they kind of bludgeon their way to victories. Even if they have a little bit of a hiccup in the pitching side, they generally score enough runs to offset that.
So the offense is fierce, leading the majors in runs per game, 5.8. The pitching, a little underrated. They're allowing the third fewest runs in major leagues, only trailing Tampa Bay and Seattle, so fewest runs allowed per game in the National League. And, Coney, you talk about a lot the home run differential. Well, the Braves are the team for you because they are way ahead of the pack in home runs hit. As we've, you know, everyone's been covering all year, 259 home runs through Labor Day, 46 ahead of the Dodgers, but they've also allowed only 141 homers, second fewest, only three behind the Cardinals. So there's a chance that they could hit the most and allow the fewest this year. Atlanta, I think the only thing that could really derail them could be the vagaries of postseason baseball. Anyone can lose a series. We saw it last year with the Braves and with the Dodgers getting bounced in the best of five LDS. And so maybe, you know, a quirky baseball thing could happen and you can have a week where you go 2-3. But I think the Braves, even with a few weeks left in the season, are really solidifying themselves, serving notice as the team to beat in MLB. And they really took it to the Dodgers this weekend at Chavez Ravine.
Yeah, in this moment, short answer is no. No one can dethrone them. Take the hottest team in the game at the moment, and I would put them up against the Braves. And I probably would have a lot of blind faith in Atlanta pulling off the sweep against whoever that team may be. Obviously, in October, all about when you play a certain team and how that mojo is going with that opponent. So different story maybe a month from now, but at this moment, I don't see anybody usurping the Atlanta Braves, who are obviously the class of Major League Baseball. People, we keep talking about the exciting series that are coming up around the calendar of September around baseball. Something else is coming up this weekend. It is week one of the NFL season. The Giants season is here, and the Talkin' Giants crew is going to be bigger than ever. Every single New York Giants home game, they will be throwing an epic tailgate party at the Meadowlands. It's spot L16 in the parking lot of MetLife Stadium. Each week is going to feature a different theme, along with delicious cater food, water, soda. There'll be a ton of entertainment, obviously. The first tailgate of the season this Sunday, September the 10th. It's the Giants and the Cowboys. It starts at 4:30. Multi-tailgate discounts are also available to be part of the Talkin' Giants tailgate crew. Come be a part of the most epic tailgate for the 2023 season with everybody from Talkin' Giants. Remember, that spot L16. In the parking lot of MetLife Stadium. For tickets, go to shop.johnboymedia.com. Click on JM Events, purchase your tickets right from the store, and they will see you at the tailgate. The division that could be the class of this pennant race going down the stretch over the final month, and it certainly seems that way, the AL West. And we kind of said this as the Mariners were gaining a lot of ground right after the trade deadline. A three-team race, M's, Astros, Rangers. Texas has fallen back here, fellas, and it is glaringly obvious why. That bullpen is leaking, and it is leaking hard at the moment. True or false, the Rangers bullpen will cost Texas a playoff berth?
Well, I think that's a great point. It's valid to talk about their bullpen. They really don't have a lot of swing and miss, prototypical high strikeout numbers in that bullpen other than Aroldis Chapman. And it just shows you how much they kind of need him to be right. You know, I think they've done a pretty good job of using him in different spots down there. Bochy knows what he's doing. You know, he kind of kept Will Smith as a closer and kind of using Chapman judiciously there in high leverage situations. But he's the one guy that can be your X factor. The pitching was always trying to catch up with the offense. If you look at their Pythagorean record, they're about 7 or 8 games below what they normally would based on the number of runs they scored and the number of runs they've given up. So they should be better. They've underachieved, and you're right, Jack. The first thing you look at is when you've underachieved by 5 or 10 games in that range from what your record potentially should be. You look at the bullpen, and that is certainly the question. And the Yankee fans know this experience. It's the Aroldis Chapman experience. He's the guy that's going to have to be the X factor for them going down. He's going to have to pitch those high leverage innings. They're going to have to ride that roller coaster, and they're going to have to get his mind right. We all know about Chapman, and his talent level is elite. The question is his confidence level? We've seen it kind of go up and down. And if he has a couple of bad outings, the next thing you know, he loses the strike zone. You know, it's all about throwing strikes for Aroldis Chapman. And if he can get the ball in the strike zone, he's still as good as anybody in the game.
Chapman has had some high-profile blowups in recent games for Texas, but it's beyond that too, because even you have a guy like Brock Burke who's had a good season overall and was really good in the first half. He's tailed off in the second half with an ERA around 5, and Josh Spores had the huge inning with the Astros. They dropped a 6 spot on him to break a tie before an out was recorded in the 7th inning on Monday. And the thing that I'll hold off on saying this will make them miss the playoffs is because I keep waiting for Toronto to really go on this run, and they're not really grabbing the opportunity. Now they're right there. They were 2-3 games back. Now they're a half game out. So this could be a really good race down the stretch, but I'm not writing off Texas just yet because I'm not sure how this game of musical chairs is going to go, because it looks like it's more about 7 teams for 6 spots. So between the Astros, Mariners, Rangers, and Blue Jays, seems like 3 of those 4 will get in. And I think Texas could still be standing when the music stops.
Well, you and I both are kind of on the stakeout waiting for Toronto to make that big statement. I think it comes next week. They have Texas coming to Rogers Center for 4 games. So right on time there, right on cue, where maybe they could take advantage of this spotty Texas bullpen. Who knows? And if they do that, again, this is a 4-game series for the Blue Jays. And I think Toronto's schedule is relatively light going the rest of the way. So we're at that point where you do take a look at each team's schedule. Again, Toronto right now, a half game out of that final spot. The Rangers not looking pretty. They can, you know, be dealt a serious dent if their series with the Astros, as it's currently going after Monday's fiasco, if it continues to go that way. I would say true at this moment in the, you know, full true false statement. A team that was virtually in first place nearly all of the season up until the middle of August, I think they're actually going to miss out on the postseason, mainly because, like we said, we want to be right here. We're waiting for Toronto. Maybe this is the point where Toronto makes the move and leapfrogs a team like the Rangers. Looking ahead, gentlemen, to October here, just based on where certain teams are playing at the moment and performing, intriguing American League postseason matchups. I don't know if there is a more intriguing matchup with one team versus another that's not in the same division at the moment. So help me out here if you think I'm kind of going crazy with this. Like, I feel the Mariners and the Astros is a more mouthwatering matchup for me, at least, than, you know, maybe putting the Mariners against the Orioles. Is it just because they're division rivals? I'm not sure, but help me out. What do you guys think? Is there a more intriguing matchup right now than, say, Mariners, Astros in the American League?
I love it. And I think the other big part of it too is you'll have a postseason rematch, right? That's where the mm-hmm. bad blood gets going. That's where the rivalries really come out. And for a series that was a sweep, Astros Mariners last year was as good as a 3-game sweep could be, because you had the Yordan Alvarez walk-off bomb off of Robbie Ray. You have the intrigue around bringing in Ray out of the bullpen for the lefty-lefty, and then Yordan hits a 3-run walk-off shot. He had another big home run in game 2 off of Luis Castillo. 2 tight, well-played games. And then a classic in game 3, the first home playoff game for the Mariners in over 2 decades, and it's 0-0 into the 18th inning. That is about as well pitched a game as you will ever see. And it was nothing into the 18th. Jeremy Peña finally winning it with a home run. So the Astros sweep Seattle. You have the division rivalry. And you wonder how the collision course could go, depending on seeding, how this shakes out with the rest of the year. But I would love an Astros-Mariners playoff series again.
Agreed. Well said. All across the board. And, you know, in a short series, once again, the Astros pitching's in much better shape this year. I mean, Mariners pitching, rather, is in much better shape this year. And we just got, obviously, we just saw the Yankees play the Astros. Yeah, Justin Verlander, boy, they need him more than ever. He kind of got banged around a little bit. His stuff was a little flat. Hunter Brown, second half woes here. He really got off to a good start. Can he rebound as a rookie pitcher and kind of right the ship a little bit? Christian Javier had a decent start against the Yankees, but has really, really struggled, especially against left-handed batters this year. So, yeah, there's some question marks for the Astros in terms of their starting rotation, and there are no questions about the Mariners and their starting rotation. So, yeah, I'm bullish on the Mariners right now. I have been for a while. I continue to be.
Yeah, I enjoy watching, you know, Rays O's throughout the season. I just don't think it has that cachet of last year's storyline built into it. Like, you have two really good teams in Baltimore and Tampa Bay, but it cannot touch Seattle and Houston right now. It's centered around the rematch of the high drama that we saw early in the postseason last year. So give me all of the Astros Mariners. Give me as many games as you possibly can. And the buildup to these games, because they're going to be facing one another in late September, last week of the season. But the buildup for both teams and a lot of clubs that are in these postseason races, there are a lot of intriguing matchups here. I was looking at the schedule for a lot of these teams in the NL wildcard race, obviously the AL West division race, the AL wild card race, and the question popped into my head, because right now, this week, as we're recording this, you have the Mariners taking on the Reds, right? Like, normally we don't have that, especially in September. You have a lot of divisional matchups happening. You have the Giants and the Cubs going at it, two teams in the NL wild card race. Astros, Rangers, like we talked about. Is the balanced schedule that we're seeing this year, is that a September blessing? Is it by coincidence here, or just more teams in the postseason mix with the expanded playoff picture? Does that kind of equal the likelihood of these juicy September matchups? What do you think?
No, you kind of hit the nail on the head right there. It's a combination of a couple of different factors there, okay. But you're right. It is kind of, we're getting used to the new schedule. We're so used to the unbalanced schedule. We're in September, you could always count on interdivision play and maybe even some catch up where you know, you're going to play seven games or maybe even more against somebody in your division, and that's no longer the case. And expanded postseason too as well keeps more teams in it, especially on the National League side. So yeah, I think this is there's still some newness to this more balanced schedule that this is the first look at it in our first September look at the new balanced schedule.
Right. And when you have this pileup of teams, I'm thinking of the National League wild card right here. You have the Phillies and Cubs in good shape as the top wild card teams. And then you have the Diamondbacks, Reds, Marlins, Giants, all within a game of each other. So you have all these teams that are nominally contenders for the postseason. So it's more likely that you're going to have teams matching up with each other. But Shaq, I like your point about the balanced schedule. I think the balanced schedule has been good for baseball in general. And I think now it's not just that you're getting you still have the division matchups, because that's still the most common game. You play 13 head-to-head instead of 19. But then you start to think, well, maybe 19 was a little overkill, right? So now, instead of it being, you know, Mariners, you would get more Mariners Astros, but you'd also get more Mariners A's. Now you're getting teams in interleague play. You're getting two interesting teams like the Mariners and Reds facing each other that usually don't.
And looking ahead to this weekend, I mean, you have the Mariners and the Rays. Tampa Bay continues to play well despite some of the injuries that they've sustained. Again, another NL wild card clash, D-backs and Cubs. Obviously, a division matchup later in the month, Marlins, Phillies. But just in the weeks ahead, we talked about the Rangers and the Blue Jays. That's a series coming up late next week, a four-game set there. Dodgers and Mariners still to come. Orioles and the Astros still have to play one another. So the intrigue is there. I think this was kind of another benefit that I don't know if it was forecasted or not with the expanded playoff format and the balanced schedule, but it's certainly a nice add-on here in September. It makes a lot of things interesting, and I bet you it draws more eyeballs to these September games, where a lot, you know, in the past, it's like, hey, get me through September, get to October. Outside of those fan bases that are right on the fringe of the postseason race, I think you have a lot more eyes locked on these games in September. Obviously, that's a good thing. More Toe in the Slab is coming up. People, I need to tell you about a special offer from DraftKings, because the NFL season is officially here. We've partnered with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official partner of the National Football League, to bring all new customers an exciting way to join in on the action right now. New customers, download the DraftKings app, use the promo code SLAB, S-L-A-B, bet just $5, and boom, $200 in bonus bets hit your account instantly. That's right, new customers who bet only $5 will get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Staying on the action, use your $200 in bonus bets on DraftKings parlays, combine multiple bets together for a shot at an even bigger payout. If sports betting is not yet available in your state, don't worry, you can still get in on the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy, where they offer cash prize contests for nearly every sport. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. New customers, use the promo code SLAB, again, S-L-A-B, bet just $5 on any wager and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code SLAB, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Guys, the New York Yankees seemingly are going to have a lot more eyes locked on their games in September, probably more than a lot of people expected. If you ask them that on, what, August 30th, August 31st, versus after their weekend series with the Astros. The influx of youth continued, and we saw it in a weekend sweep over the Astros in Houston. Jason Dominguez, Austin Wells, they're joining players like Everson Pereira, like Oswald Peraza, and of course, Anthony Volpe. And Jason Dominguez was right there. Two home runs, three games, electrifying these games, hitting third. Jason Dominguez hitting third between Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. It all leads to three wins. The Yankees, at the time of the recording, they're a game under 500. Some people are actually looking at the deficit in the wild card loss column. They're currently eight back, with just a few weeks to play. But I'm wondering, with all the problems that we've documented here this season for the Yankees, bottom line is they're still a last place team at the moment. A lot of question marks here. I'm wondering how much Kool-Aid should Yankee fans be sipping on right now with all this youth on the roster in September?
Valid points all the way around. How much can you hang your hat on September performance, right? So with all that being said, we're still in the entertainment business, and all of a sudden the Yankees got a lot more entertaining overnight. They went from the oldest batting age to the youngest batting age. What a flip. When you think about that for a minute. I mean, the Yankees had the oldest lineup for the majority of the season, age-wise. You know, their 1-9 on any given day was the oldest. And now all of a sudden, the flip of the script, and it's a complete reversal. It's fun to watch. But the question becomes is, this isn't just sort of September call-ups. You're trying to revamp up the middle. And you know, the old cliche about how strong are you up the middle for the Yankees. Well, we know you have Volpe at shortstop, who's had a really solid rookie year at shortstop. Do we have a new catcher, an everyday catcher behind the plate? Is Austin Wells going to be the answer? Do you have a new everyday center fielder in Dominguez, a switch hitter? And we know about switch hitting center fielders in Yankee history. I mean, you don't want to put too much pressure on a 20-year-old, but you can't help but think about Bernie Williams and Mickey Mantle and the switch hitting legendary outfielders for the Yankees. And then also on the mound, how about Michael King, you know, potentially being a guy that's going to be in the middle of your rotation next year, among others. So yeah, there's a lot of questions that are really interesting to follow and maybe potentially get some sort of answers in September, but buyer beware. You know, your point is well taken, Shaq, that wait a minute here. Yeah, we're going to get a read. Yeah, 100 at-bats is significant in 1 month of September. That's about what you could get, around 100 at-bats for September call-ups if they play every day. Yeah, it's a pretty good read, but nonetheless, yeah, it's not enough to say, hey, we've got this question solved. But it might be enough to sort of go into spring training and say, we're going to continue this, you know, this slotting right up the middle and keep these guys in place.
enjoy it for what it is. You know, this has been a disappointing season overall, but if you could end on a good note, that's something to bring into the offseason and go into spring training for next year. So just enjoy watching these guys play. You know, we hear so much about guys like Jason Dominguez. Well, now you get to turn on the game and watch him play every day. You know, how does he look in center field? How are his at bats? You know, how's his arm? How does he go first to third? You know, Austin Wells, how does he handle a big league staff? How does he look behind the plate? Getting Peraza, people have wanted Peraza to get every day at bats. Well, now he's starting to get him, and we'll see how he looks. So, you know, it's lower stakes because they're still out of the playoff picture, really. So you just get a good look at these guys and see who's a keeper, who you can dream on going into next year. But I think there is a lot there, and because you don't want youth just for the sake of youth. You want guys who are young, who are actually worth playing. And these guys are showing something.
The old adage goes, hey, never believe what you see in March or September. But at this moment, you don't have another option other than to talk about what's in front of you. And what we're seeing, what's in front of us, is exciting at the moment. We're seeing more athleticism. We're seeing more speed. The Yankees, over a four-game stretch, and James, I don't know if you can, you know, if this is something that you know off the top of your head, over a four-game stretch this past road trip, they had 7 stolen bases. I doubt there was another four-game stretch throughout this season where they had 7 stolen bases. So just there's different components and different elements that have added to this youth movement with Dominguez and Wells being called up. Aaron Boone kept talking about the presence Austin Wells has behind the plate. And it's like, okay, what exactly is that? Well, we saw it over 3 games, how he's handled different pitchers. It's really difficult to catch a sinker from Clay Holmes without ever doing it before. And he made it look pretty simple. So that's obviously a plus. Is it something that will sustain itself over the long run? Who knows? But again, what's in front of us right now is fun. That's all we could talk about. That's all we could observe and try and comment on. So enjoy it for what it is, just to echo, you know, your guys' sentiments here. Obviously, there's a lot to fix under the hood. I don't think anyone inside that organization realizes like that it's not the case just because of one good weekend in Houston. But enjoy what you're seeing. Enjoy what's in front of you. Another thing about this final month of the season here for the Yankees, and in terms of looking ahead to 2024, yeah, you have a lot of these young positional players, but we're seeing Michael King now go through several starts here, building success, learning more and more how much his stuff translates as a starter and how to use that stuff as a starter. So in terms of building toward the future, is there actually another storyline that's currently playing out more important than Michael King's transition into a starting pitcher? What are your thoughts?
I like it. I think he's got the goods to be a starter. Now, the question becomes, can he handle the workload? In the minor leagues, he did. This isn't the first time that he's going to be stretched out. This is what he wants. It's what he was doing really in the majority of his career until the last couple of years as a reliever. So all that being said, you know, you guys have heard me talk about diversity of stylistically speaking in a rotation. I think he gives that to the Yankees. And potentially, as you look forward to next year, you have Gerrit Cole at the top, obviously, who's a traditional power pitcher, four-seam guy, comes right at you. He could have pitched in any era. You know, he reminds me of like some of the 70s guys, you know, almost Nolan Ryan-like or, you know, Don Drysdale-like. So, you know, that's how I see Gerrit Cole, a pure power pitcher. Rodon behind him, if he's right, it gives you that lefty power guy on the heels of Gerrit Cole. Now let's talk about style. You know how that fits in. Nestor Cortez, kind of a funky lefty that gives you different arm angles and different looks. Michael King can really fit into that and give you to some diversity because it's two seam, four seam mix, change up, sweeper mix. I think that's very that poses kind of a completely different look that he potentially can give you opposed to your other right-handers, whether that's Gerrit Cole or however the rotation shakes down next year, or whatever it might be. Even Clark Schmidt, for that matter. Clark Schmidt's more of a breaking ball guy. A lot of sliders, a lot of cutters. Michael King with his two-seam, four-seam mix and change up to lefties, I think stylistically gives you a completely different look. I like it. You know, and you know, I don't know how you quantify that. I can't show you a metric that shows you how important that is. I just know that, you know, boots on the ground experience that I have, that I like his style I think he gives you the diversity you need in the middle of that rotation potentially. It's a big deal. You're right. It is a big deal that he's done well. It's a big deal. They're going to take it seriously. And I like his chances of being in the middle of that rotation next year.
You sold me, Coney, because when this was going on a couple of weeks ago, I was a little reticent about really going in for this because you had the bird in the hand. You know, you have Michael King as a really superb multi-inning relief ace. And you have that, you say, well, you don't want to mess with a good thing, but we know he has the pitches for it. It's not your typical, well, this guy has to be a reliever because he's just, you know, fastball slider. He has a well-rounded repertoire, and it's good that he wanted this and the Yankees supported him. And, you know, he's been a good Yankee so far, and we love him here on the show, friend of the show. He filled in for Coney when you were on the mend last year. And so I love it, and I'm happy to see him getting stretched out and, you know, two and two thirds, four innings, five innings. Now he's basically at 69 pitches on Sunday. He's basically a full-fledged starter at this point. And I think he is absolutely in the driver's seat for a rotation spot next year. Oh, and also, guys, sorry, you mentioned, you asked the question before about the stolen bases, seven steals in a four-game stretch ties a season high for the Yankees. They had a five-steal game during the Marlins series last month. So that kind of throws it off a little bit. So some wheels from the Baby Bombers or the Yankee Utes or whatever everyone's calling them now.
I think Baby Bombers is bad mojo just from the first cycle of Baby Bombers. So maybe we put that phrase on the shelf for a little bit longer. Michael King, all for it, was really eager to see him against this Astros lineup. The Astros, a little bit different than the Nationals, a little bit different than the Tigers. So I wanted to say this was a big test for him this past weekend. He nailed it. And again, just what David was talking about with the pitch types, if you can locate both sides of the plate with a four-seamer and a two-seamer like Michael King can, that's a pretty high baseline to start from. There's a big reason why you should be excited here with Michael King moving forward. And bottom line, seems like he's most happy as a starting pitcher. We want Michael King's happiness to be at the top where the air is crisp here. So obviously has the pitches to do it, and it seems like he is at his happiest. And how important is that, David? You want players to be happy, right?
Well, yeah, motivated, happiness. Well, sure. I mean, he's earned the right, I think. Mm-hmm. He's earned that right to get this chance. He's paid his dues. Now, with all that being said, a subtle little thing that happened with Michael King, if you didn't notice, is he broke out his windup for the first time. If you watch Michael King, you know he's got that little curtsy in his stretch position, the way he starts and finishes. It takes a little time for him to get going. And he broke out his windup, looked much better to me. I told him after the game, that's you. You morphed into the starter right there with that little windup. It allows him more time with the pitch clock, he said. The wind up because it's abbreviated and it kind of gets him into a rhythm and a flow a little quicker. So I think we kind of saw a subtle change there. If you weren't watching, that Michael King kind of broke out his wind up. That means he's fully transferred into that mindset as a starter. And secondly, don't forget about Johnny Brito as that multi-inning reliever guy. His numbers are outstanding in that role. I like him better in that role than as a starter. I like Johnny Brito with that heavy sinker coming in those middle innings and eating up innings and getting ground balls and getting quick outs. I like him in that role in those middle innings. It's kind of a reversal. Michael King's the starter. Johnny Brito's your multi-inning reliever. We'll see how that plays out into the rest of the year and into next year.
Randy Vasquez looked good in that same role this week too.
Yeah. All against the Astros, no less. That switch to the windup, David, happened while he faced the Astros lineup a second time through. He was going with that curtsy delivery that we've been accustomed to seeing him go through out of the bullpen. Was that just to offer a different look, or was it coincidence that he went, you know, he started to do it? I think it was against the number nine hitter at that moment, but second time through, is it coincidence? Is it part of changing up the looks? What's it all about?
He had talked about it. He had used it on the side. He said he'd been working on it, trying to break it back out. It's obviously something he's done before in the past when he was a starter. And I think it's twofold. It's kind of a mindset, sort of like, hey, I'm a starter now. I'm going to get into the full mode, you know, mentally. And also it's a sense of rhythm from a windup that can give you not only momentum within rhythm and timing with your windup, but it also can give you a little more time with the pitch clock, as he said. You know, sometimes he, you know, it takes a while. His delivery was slower from the stretch than it is from the windup. It's usually the other way around, but I think it obviously gives him a little more time to get the signal from PitchCom and then go ahead and go right into your windup and you're ready to go. And then secondly, you know, there's some deception in a windup. There's some arm speed you can build in a windup too, in terms of the momentum. You get your momentum all going in one motion in a windup as opposed to an abbreviated set position. So that's why they call it a set position. You're already set. The windup's kind of a free flowing motion. So, you know, I like it. I think the bottom line, though, it's more of a mindset with him. It's like, okay, I'm going to use my windup now because I'm fully immersed into the starting rotation experience. And this is who I'm going to be moving forward. And, you know, the first look at it was really good. You know, I like the cadence, the rhythm of his windup. It seemed to suit him and he fell right back into it.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to watch more as the weeks, you know, draw closer to the end of the season. He's probably has three or four more starts before it's all said and done here in 2023. And it could portend to a big boost in the rotation for 2024 with Michael King, and could solidify a role for Brito as well in the bullpen. So there's a lot of reasons to watch the Yankees here over the final few weeks, not just the youth, but when it comes to pitching, they're potentially lining their ducks up for placements in the 2024 rotation and the bullpen. Lots of reasons to watch, lots of exciting reasons to watch here. All right, guys, that's going to do it here for this episode this weekend. Lot of intriguing series, like we mentioned, that have playoff implications. The Yankees have Old Timers Day against the Brewers. Thankfully, there's no game for David Cone. Just a nice, light and easy day for Old Timers Day. They're celebrating the 98 team, though, David. What's the most exciting part that you're looking forward to there?
Oh, it's got to be Derek Jeter back in the house. You know, that's what this is all about, to get Jeets back in the house. And that's a big deal for the Yankee fans. You know, when you think about those teams and you think about the popularity of Jeter, of Bernie Williams, when you get those guys in the house together, you know, that's really what it's all about. I mean, those are the generational players. Those are the Mickey Mantles of the 30-something generation, the guys like yourselves that were there and that were kids at the time watching that team and that dynasty. Those are the guys. You know, Jeter is the guy. And that's really, I think, what we're all happy to see, that, you know, the Miami experience, the ownership experience is in the rearview mirror. Jeter's back, and he's sort of reestablishing his Yankee roots. And this is what it's all about. Jeter's going to walk out on that field, you know, this Saturday.
I think Coney will get a pretty good pop too.
Yeah.
They've seen me. I'm old hat. They see me a lot. So big Bernie and Jeter. That's when I think about Bernie and Jeter, I think about all the old timers days of the past when you'd see, you know, it was always like, who's the last guy introduced? That was the big thing. Who's the last introduction? Used to be Joe DiMaggio, right? Or Mickey Mantle or Reggie Jackson at some point. You know, it used to be jokes about who's going to be the last guy introduced and who are the generational guys. And yeah, that's really what the Yankee tradition's about. It's who's next in line. We know it's Jeter and Bernie and Posada and guys like that are the generational guys that are the Mickey Mantles, the Joe DiMaggio types of this generation. And that's what this is all about. We're getting back to that again because those guys are back.
Derek Jeter, officially an old timer. James and I, we are officially old. We'll talk to you guys next week. Again, please subscribe to our YouTube channel so you don't miss a beat of what we're streaming each and every week. For David Cone, for James Smythe, for our terrific producer, Dan Work, I'm Justin Shackle. We'll talk to you next week on Toe in the Slab, Pitching with David Cone. As always, a production of John Boy Media. Take care, everybody.